you know, you can feel that juice all around you. J-Rad shows, you know, we see it. It's like, man, these people are fucking into it, you know. But you got to be able to kind of channel the whole thing and just be like, I'm just doing it. Like, I'm not really getting too worked up about it in real time. It's just kind of just giving it back. There is sort of like this sort of like little kid excitement about music. You just feel it before you even go on. It's just like, man, this is the shit, right? Like, we're really doing it. Like, we're up here and we're fucking really doing it. I'm all about that.
All right, so here we are with Scott Metzger. Scott, my man, how are you doing today?
Hey, Cam, good to see you. Doing well.
So for everyone out there listening, Scott here plays guitar in Joe Russo's Almost Dead, and he's also in another group named Wolf, who has an EP coming out. So, Scott, I think a cool way to start this off would be to kind of tell us about this EP, and, you know, I'm curious, between J-Rad and Wolf, how would you sum up your musical philosophy and your approach to playing?
Somebody came up to me after a gig the other night and they were like, oh, you know, I really love it when you kind of take the lead role in a group because you always lead with taste and humor. And I was like, oh man, I couldn't have said that any better. Like that is what I'm going for. I'm a person who enjoy studying the history of music, and I really do know about the history of the guitar and the history of a few different genres. And I always want to respect that, everything that I've learned, and kind of not just think, I'm going to go up there and like, I'm reinventing the wheel. And, you know, like, nothing matters. I'm definitely rooted in tradition in a way. And I feel like that involves being tasteful and being humble to the history of music. I'm also somebody who really, really believes that the source of music is to enjoy life and celebrate life, and that it shouldn't be too this like excruciatingly, you know, dramatic thing necessarily. I mean, certainly dramatic feelings are a part of life, and there's ups and downs and everything, and that should be expressed in music too. But I think ultimately it should be you should walk away from a concert feeling better than when you got there. And I really try and keep that in mind. Like, the word fun comes up in my mind a lot when it comes to music. Serious though, and, you know, taking it very seriously, but, you know, fun can be serious too, just an enjoyment in it.
So you bring up being tasteful, and I think that would be a really interesting word to look at. Like, let's say there's an up and coming artist listening to this. Like, how would you fully describe what it means to play tastefully?
Oh man, I guess what it defined to me is playing whatever's appropriate for what's going on in the music at that given moment without making it all about yourself. You know, there's certainly moments, you know, tasteful can mean playing a bunch of notes and like playing all the shit, you know, at a certain moment, you know, if it's appropriate for the context of what's going on around you. But I guess tasteful for me really just means getting out of the way, you know, not playing from an egotistical look at me kind of place ever, like not for one second, because if I go there, I will kind of take a deep breath and reset. And I've gotten to the point now where I can feel when I'm on in my lane and if I step out of my lane, or if I get a little too excited, which is sometimes the right thing to do, but to get, you know, get myself back into that sort of humble place, because music's a very overwhelming thing to me. The power of music is I just can't believe how powerful music can be, you know, and I never want to think like, I've got this, like, I got it all figured out or something, and like, check me out. You know, I'm not really that guy.
You bring up having like a humble approach, but then it's like juxtaposed with this kind of really free scene you're in where a lot of players can play with a lot of notes and can let it all out there. And I'm curious with you, like, as you've progressed through kind of like your phases of growing as a player, what your conflict with perfectionism has been like, and, you know, how you've drawn that line over just like letting yourself like totally let it loose versus like crafting something, like what that dialogue's been like for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you say perfectionism and for me, I mean, I am complete anti-perfectionism, you know. I just don't think there's such a thing. And I think that most of my favorite music that really speaks to me is flawed in some way, like technically flawed. Like if you listen to, I don't know, I mean, there's a million examples, but like an easy one right off the top of my head is like, if you listen to Miles Davis play trumpet solos back in the day, technically they're not that pretty. You know, they're kind of fucked up. And like the notes, the way he approaches notes, he has a lot of problems getting some notes out here and there and stuff. But the ideas are so perfectly placed and so human, you know? And I think that that's what I'm going for. Like, you know, ultimately I just want to make human music and the human experience is not perfect. And it's not, you know, in this nice little package, you know, it's kind of we're all kind of figuring it out as you go along in real time, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think when I was younger, I was wrapped up with wanting to play perfectly, and now I've killed off that part of myself by experience, by learning that that's a losing battle. And I've also learned that the more I get away from wanting to play perfectly, the more it seems to connect with audiences.
I'd like to talk about improvisation. And to make an analogy in baseball, like a pitcher can love this low and outside fastball, or they can fall in love with this certain kind of curveball, and hitters can come to expect that, which plays into hitter strengths. And then, you know, with music, it can be easy to kind of fall into one's own patterns and play similar riffs, especially in like an improv setting where you really default to your faculties. Like, I'm curious with you, how you keep yourself from falling into repetitive patterns and from building up like a muscle memory when it comes to being creative.
I think that you're more chasing a feeling as opposed to, you know, the maybe if you have a conversation with somebody, right, and hopefully maybe this will be one of them, right, and you walk away from the conversation and you say, man, that was such a great talk, like we really got to it, you know, we got after it and we really got into a space and really touched on some really big things, you're not going to necessarily be able to go back and remember every single sentence that was said. You know, you couldn't like transcribe the whole conversation, but you could give like a big picture of, you know, what happened and how you discussed it. But if you had gone into that discussion with like a bunch of notes, you'd been like, okay, no matter what the other person says, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this, then it would go nowhere. On really good nights, I couldn't tell you at all what we played or like what scales we were thinking about in certain jams or anything. That would be ridiculous. You just know that it connected, and you just gotta, again, it's the bigness of the energy and power of music. It's like you just sort of have to, like, you know, hope that you practiced enough so that you can grab what needs grabbing in real time. And that's an ongoing process, obviously, but you know, it's like, oh well, this worked in Boston, this cool thing that I played worked in Boston, so I'm going to do it in Nashville too. And it's going to like, that never works ever. I can tell you from experience, like when I was younger, I mean, there are so many times when I was younger, I'd be like, oh man, this really turned the place out a couple of nights ago. I'm going to do the same thing. And also, you know, you mentioned J-Rad earlier. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention like Russo is really the ultimate guy who is aware of the band not repeating themselves. He will not have it. Like he's an amazing in a way a teacher, aggressively just won't let it go to where it went before. You know, he is constantly dedicated to like making sure that you know, we're getting into new places every time we play. And being around somebody like that, especially as a drummer, who's got a lot of control over the direction of how the music's going to go. It's really inspiring that you want to, you know, you don't want to just throw him under the bus and have him be the only one that's going after that. You know.
Well, if you made it this far, thank you for listening. Just want to let y'all know we've got these hand-dyed, ice-dyed Weird Music Podcast hoodies and also tees. If you'd like one, let us know. We'd love to get you one. Also want to give a big shout-out to Voodoo Ranger from New Belgium Brewing for sponsoring this podcast. And a big thank you to the geniuses over at Thrax CBD for sponsoring us with their amazing products. Also want to give a big thank you to J&J Distribution, Ohio's premier Delta 8 and CBD wholesale supplier. Retailers, check out their brands Cloud 8, Compassionate Buds, and Zaza. Also, big thank you to our local print shop, Franklinton Press. Definitely hit them up for any of your custom merch or custom printing needs. They'll take good care of you. Got links in the description. And yeah, much love, y'all. Now back to the episode.
It's so interesting how taking this mental approach where you're really giving into your preparation or to whatever new thing lies ahead and not following a script, that flow state, it applies to almost anything that has to do with performance. And I'm wondering what you might be able to advise, like what insights you might be able to share on the right way to mentally approach something like that. So in a way where you really can get taken over by the moment.
Yeah, I think that it's two different things, honestly. Like I teach a lot of guitar students when I'm at home. I enjoy teaching. You know, I've got a little handful of my students, and I always sort of tell them it's two totally different things. Like learning how to play the guitar is sort of one skill set, but then learning how to like really play in the moment and just sort of go beyond any fear of sounding bad is like a whole other skill set that you have to learn. You have to technically be able to play your instrument. You just have to, and that's a lifelong thing. And the way that you're going to play your instrument is going to change over the years. And so is your concept of playing in the moment. Like for me, when I was younger, my idea of playing in the moment was to be playing all the shit that I had practiced. You know, back when I was, you know, in my like early 20s and stuff, and really trying to impress people, which now seems like a lost cause. You know, I don't really care that much, because now once you get a taste of this, you know, you turn it over and it really is, it feels like, you know, walking off a cliff, especially when you're up in front of like big crowds. It really takes a certain type of courage, I guess, to really get after it and really do it. But once you get a taste for that, then playing to impress people and just playing your licks and stuff just feels really cute and sort of embarrassing. You know, it's like you're really not playing music. Then you're just sort of trying to get some attention, and you're happen to be using music to do it. But man, it's kind of like going, you know, in Stranger Things when they go to the Upside Down. Man, once you see that other side, there's no going back. You know, you can't. Everything else feels so is if it just falls so short compared to that. Once you get used to hanging out in there for a while, it's very addictive.
I think something similar can be said from the fans' perspective too.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think so. I have to assume so, just because you know, they keep coming. They keep coming back for more. But also, yeah, I was at the Phillies game the other night. I went down to Philadelphia when they won the NLCS. They clinched the division against the Braves, and there were 46,000 people there. And I was watching Zach Eflin pitch, and I was thinking, man, it's like music. It's like, how can this guy possibly do a job that requires so much concentration and so much, like, you know, you just got to like do your job. And there's literally 46,000 people there losing their minds, you know, and just so loud and like so freaking out. And I was like, this is it. This must be this must be what it's like to be in a J-Rad show. You know, like, I'm on the other side now.
It's impressive. But, it's truly impressive.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that I think it's a similar thing because it's like, you know, you can feel that juice all around you at J-Rad shows. You know, we see it. It's like, man, these people are fucking into it, you know. But you got to be able to kind of channel the whole thing and just be like, I'm just doing it. Like, I'm not really getting too worked up about it in real time. It's just kind of just giving it back.
You brought up Joe and his emphasis on always doing something new. And I'm curious, like, beyond that, can you talk to me about some personality traits of people you've played with that you just really admire, that you think are just really, really strong personality traits for an artist to have?
Well, you know, everybody's different. And everybody that when you get to a certain level of musician or, you know, everyone has found their lane. So you have a lot of different personality types and a lot of big personalities. But that doesn't necessarily mean everybody's like loud, you know, over the top. You could have a big personality, but be like an intensely quiet person too. But I think there is an understanding that like, we're all sort of lucky to be in the game on a certain level. You know, at least those are the guys that I want to be around. I mean, I've been lucky. I've played with a lot of people that I've really looked up to, you know, Nels Klein, and Schofield. In terms of, I'm just talking about guitar players like Schofield and Nels Klein. And I mean, there's like a laundry list of guys that I've gotten to be on stage with. And there is sort of like this sort of like little kid excitement about music with all these guys under the surface, you know, where you can kind of look over at them or you can just feel it before you even go on. It's just like, man, this is the shit, right? Like we're really doing it. Like we're up here and we're fucking really doing it. I'm all about that, you know? Mm. And I think your man, Bill Frisell has the same thing. You can see it on Bill, like really clearly when he looks like he's 6 years old sometimes when he's up there. He's just like, oh my God, can't believe it. And maybe that's why he connects with so many people, and a respect for the other people that you're playing with. That's a real thing that I've found for the people that I want to be around. I sort of talk about it a lot, but I did a gig one night with Nels Klein, Billy Martin, and John Medeski, and it was a four piece. It was just the four of us, and it was all improvised, and it was 2 hours long. And I knew that going into it, those three had done those kinds of gigs a lot before. The real takeaway was that there was zero attitude as to like, oh, well, we know what we're doing and this is like the new guy. There was like none of that on or off stage. I remember I threw out like an idea and within 3 or 4 minutes, that idea became the centerpiece of where everything went. I was like, oh, wow, man, like these guys are not looking at this as like a seniority thing or anything. It's like they heard what they thought was a good idea and it didn't matter who it was coming from. And they followed that. And that's the shit. You know, all those guys are like that, if you ask me. Schofield, same thing. You know, it's just like really, really open to any musical idea that holds some weight, no matter who it's coming from.
Can you think back to times you might have felt like burnt out on music?
Oh yeah. Definitely. And it still happens from time to time. Yeah, I mean, I took 2 years off in 2006. Really? To kind of just reassess the whole thing. I was 28 at the time and I was burned out. You know, I spent all my 20s on the road and like really on the road, like, you know, shitty hotels, 3 guys in a hotel room, touring around in a van that was breaking down all the time. It was rugged. After 8 years of that, 9 years of that, I was like, can I go the distance? You know, like, can I really do this? And after a couple of years, I decided like, I missed that feeling of it being the centerpiece of my life all the time so much that it was like, okay, you know, I'm legit. I don't know if I'll make any money or have any sort of success at all, but I'm going to do it. You know,
I feel like with anything being that you're so involved with and, you know, it's so involved with it to the point where you could get burnt out on it, that ability to to be taken over by childlike wonder, to see it with, you know, enthusiasm. It can actually be a challenge to take that vibe towards something like music or anything that someone's really involved in. And I'm curious with you, like, what you've learned about cultivating that attitude.
Yeah, that's great. I totally agree with what you just said. And I really am very conscious of, like, right now I'm in a stretch of 2 weeks where I don't have any gigs. Well, I've got a gig at the end of this week, but it's with old friends. I don't even consider it like work or anything. And I didn't have a gig last week. And I'm consciously, like, not listening to any music at all for this window, like very, very deliberately not listening to any music, and also being very on the lookout for things that I can, like the story that I was telling you about being at the Phillies game. I'm on the lookout for things where I can be like, oh yeah, this relates to music. You know, I can take this back with me in 2 weeks, you know, when I get back to gigging, and when I get back to, like, thinking about being really in the shit, I'll take these experiences and this energy back with me. But it's, you have to be aware about conserving how you handle your musical energy, you know. And it's different, you know, it's just like, if there was something that I really wanted to be working on or really dive deep into, right now, these couple of weeks of quiet time would be a great opportunity to dive all the way in and just go all in. But there's nothing really like that that I'm right now. But there will be the next time I have a break, I'm sure. I don't know what it is, but it'll be something.
Let's pretend like you're sitting at the diner with, like, your niece or nephew, and they're just scraping the tip of the iceberg with music and, like, whoa. Wow, this is so cool. And they're like, who are some of your favorite guitar players? I'm curious what kinds of artists you might mention and what kinds of things about their playing, like, really stand out in your mind.
Oh man. Well, like I said before, I mean, I'm somebody that really is into, like, I've studied a lot of music. That would be just such an enormous question. You know, well, for me, I don't know, just off the top of my head, I would say, like, you know, you can listen to Roy Buchanan, who is a Telecaster player from the 70s. His early stuff is where it's at. And it is the most emotional, moving version of, like, blues guitar I've ever heard. On top of having, like, a super unique approach to just playing the instrument, like, technically, you know, but you will feel Roy Buchanan's playing before you understand it, you know? And that, to me, is, like, kind of the ultimate compliment. Bill Frisell is kind of the whole thing to me. No one ever played guitar like Bill Frisell before Bill Frisell. And he came up with, he's developed an entire universe that is just immediately recognizable as Bill Frisell. Right. And then if I had to say a third, I don't know. It's so tough. But, you know, I would probably have to go with Nels Klein, because there was this whole world of avant-garde guitar that existed before Nels Klein, but he sort of somehow put it into a package that made an entire generation really, like, have, like, this aha moment. But they were like, oh, this is the shit. It's, like, it's super out, but it's somehow, it's like, he also is a guy who has studied enough of the guitar that he kind of found this lane for avant-garde guitar that really connected with everybody. But it's not so, it's not like Derek Bailey or something, who is, most people just think is, you know, normal people hear it and they're just like, dude, this is noise. You know, this isn't even music. But Nels is coming out of that school, but he kind of made it, like, presentable, like, to your parents, or, you know what I mean? he cleaned it up a little bit.
That balance between, like, exploring and then familiarity. It's an interesting balance.
Yeah, that's an art form. Because I guess that everybody who connects with a lot of people and really turns on a lot of people, you know, I'm surrounded by a lot of people that are like super into the fish thing. And, you know, Trey, I think, did that for a lot of people, you know, is like, he could like totally do the shredding thing. And he had like his own sound and his own this and that. And he also wasn't afraid to like really get off the grid and go to like some like atmospheric, you know, atmospheric, interesting places. But yeah, he's a good example of a guy who walked that line.
I'm curious with you, what is most important to you when you think about how you define success for yourself?
These are good questions, man. I've always thought that as a musician, if I'm respected by the people that I respect, that's a success. That's a successful situation for me. You know, I want to be, if I'm like, you know, welcomed back with a bunch of people that I was sort of intimidated to play with the first time, because I was like, man, am I ready for this level of musicianship? If I have those kinds of guys' respect or people's respect, then I can sleep well at night, you know, knowing that I did what I set out to do.
You mentioned how like the brutal touring you were doing in your 20s and how you took 2 years off. Like, I'm curious, when either you're in a creative rut or just like life can seem really gray at times, like what you've learned are the most impactful lessons with like navigating through that.
I guess that good times and bad times all, you know, come and go. And then you just gotta have faith that, you know, if you just keep doing what you sort of believe is really right on some level, that, you know, this too shall pass kind of thinking. You know, and just be patient. I think the patience is an underestimated thing, especially in the world that we live in, man. Everybody's in such a big fucking hurry for everything. You know, they want more followers. They want their own records out. They want to be a leader. They don't want to be a sideman. You know, all this stuff. It's like, man, everybody slow down a little bit.
Well, Scott, man, thank you so much for joining me here. This has been awesome to talk with you, man.
Yeah, Cam, likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
Got a couple more questions. You listen this far, definitely, you know, go and check out new EP from Wolf. Got a link in the description here. So you've got decades under your belt of practicing your craft. And I'm curious, like what growth and improvement looks like for you now?
I think it's a lot of fundamentals. I spend a lot of time practicing. Like when I'm practicing now, I sort of just practice getting like really, really basic stuff is what I focus on, like playing with better feel and time and really focusing on my sound, you know, just making sure notes are ringing out properly and nothing flashy at all, really. And just practicing again, getting to that feeling where I just kind of am not thinking. Those are the best. You know, that's really the goal, is to be able to get to a point where you can play for X amount of time. You get done and you say, man, I don't know what we did or what we played exactly, but it felt awesome. And just kind of cultivating that, you know, focusing and zooming in on that feeling and trying to stay in that as much as possible.
Last question for you. If, you know, there's one lesson or mantra from your journey, from kind of what you've been through and what you've learned, what would you say maybe that takeaway is?
Don't overthink it.
I love it.
That's it.
Awesome. Scott Metzger, Wolf, check out the new EP, J-Rad, tour dates in the description. Listen this far. Thank you. Scott Metzger, everybody.
Thanks a lot, Cam.